This power, it's meant for women. And women alone. And when you touch it, you make it filthy.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 382 for the week of November 22nd, 2021. I am dark friend David T. Cole, and I'm here with brooding blacksmith Dan Cassino.
You have two wolves inside you.
Beltane enthusiast Jim Durr.
Worst Beltane ever.
And local wisdom Sean Pfluger.
I'll pull my braid, then stab you through the heart.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Originally, this was going to be just a couple of our older Patreon episodes glued together for Thanksgiving because most of us are off. But I thought, well, Wheel of Time on Amazon Prime is debuting, and I know three people that are really into Wheel of Time. So why don't we get those guys in here for an all-guy session of Wheel of Time. And I will try to explain Wheel of Time, being the only person on the panel who has never read the books and has really no idea what is going on. So Wheel of Time exists in a world that sort of shares a temporal Aztec notion that time has these giant cycles of rebirth and destruction and renewal. And there are magic users, but they're only women. And they're trying to find the guy that's either going to destroy the world or make the world really great, depending on what year it is. Turns out it's going to be one of four people that live in a sleepy river town. And then they have to go on a journey. And of course, there is a prophecy involved because there always has to be a prophecy with these sort of things. And there also is choreographed dance number with villagers because there always has to be a choreographed dance number with the villagers and these sorts of things. So with that understanding, what the Wheel of Time is, it is also the sort of first of Amazon's big series with their new strategy of going big or going home. This one sort of being the lead in to their next one, which is going to be the Lord of the Rings prequel, sequel, mequel, whatever they're doing there. Guys, how badly did I butcher the description of Wheel of Time? Let's start with Mr. Dan Cassino. Give us the real quick overview of what Wheel of Time is all about.
Sure. So Dave has right. It's this Aztec idea that time moves in these grand, grand circles. And because it's moving all these grand, grand circles, the things that happened a couple thousand years ago are going to happen again. And people have kind of forgotten what happened thousands of years ago. The only people who haven't forgotten are this very Dune-like priestess sorority, the Aes Sedai, who are setting up the world for the recoming of the dragon, who last time the wheel turned around, messed things up and broke the world. And so now men can't access magic anymore. So the dragon has been reincarnated. It's one of, in the show, five different people, up from three in the books. We don't know who it is. And so the Dark One, or whoever, the Dark One's friends, are out to get these five people and bring them under the reign of the Dark One, while the Aes Sedai want to capture him in order to control or maybe kill them.
Sean, would you agree with that summation? Anything you need to add? As I'm going to guess the biggest Wheel of Time fan on the panel today, who stood in line in the cold DC area to watch the premiere on a big movie screen. What say you?
Yes. I would say that's basically right. Robert Jordan based it on the Greek idea instead of the Aztec idea of the reoccurrence of ages coming over and over again. A lot of the Wheel of Time, it talks about ages and legends and myths. So there are things that are going to pop up throughout the series that are referenced to myths that we already know, that are slightly tweaked. But the men who learn to channel can go mad after a period of time, and that's why they're sought after and killed.
So, Jim, here's my question. Everything I'm reading about Wheel of Time on the internet instantly wants to compare it to Game of Thrones, compare and contrast. Do you think that's fair? Is it the same type of show? And if it's different, how would you like characterize it for somebody who's watched Game of Thrones but hasn't delved into Wheel of Time yet?
I talked to my wife about this a bit because she got weirdly into Game of Thrones when that came out. Not actually when it came out. It was like third season or something. Suddenly she was like, oh, we should watch this. And I already watched like season one and kind of fell off. And then she got like crazy into it, like read the books and bought like supplemental materials and the whole nine. This is probably not going to do that for her, because there's a difference between like low fantasy, high fantasy kind of thing, where this is magic right from the jump. People are throwing fireballs and dismantling buildings and stuff. Whereas Game of Thrones, there was some of that, and it got, you know, became more as the series went on. But the first three seasons are really a political intrigue, right? It's people and families fighting against each other and people getting stabbed in the back. And this is going to be more of a typical fantasy hero's journey kind of story. People who are into Game of Thrones are not necessarily going to be drawn into this in the same way.
And I think, Jim, you're right that it's less Game of Thrones. It's much more the pattern before Game of Thrones, right? It's much more Lord of the Rings, except they threw all the teen angst in there, right? So it's like it's Lord of Riverdale, right? They are trying to, and it doesn't help that the lead character, Rand, looks like AJ Kappa. Like, it is Archie and his friend Dirtbag Hipster and the brooding blacksmith, and they're going on a quest, right? What's crazy is in the books, of course, they're not young adults. They're not 20-something. They're like 15. Here, they made them older, but they put all the teen angst, right? So, oh, are they going to sleep together? Are they going to do this? Which is not in the books at all. I mean, the books are not quite at Lord of the Rings level. No one ever has sex ever. But this one, I mean, these guys definitely are doing it. And there's jealousy and there's all that. So they're trying to bring in, I think, more of a teen audience.
I was trying to explain why I was getting a different vibe from Wheel of Time versus Game of Thrones, despite like the visual trappings of it. Game of Thrones felt like watching a sort of political tale slowly roll out. Wheel of Time, to me, at least in these first three episodes that are available, felt like watching somebody play Dungeons and Dragons.
I knew that this is coming for a very long time. I've been paying attention to the news. And I knew that this is going to be a reaction to Game of Thrones, because Amazon's going to try to get that audience. And I was fearful what people were going to think, because it's so magic forward. Like, it's about magic. There's tons of political intrigue, just like Game of Thrones, but magic is so at the forefront that I think that would turn people off. So I'm interested to see what other people thought of it, with it being so magic forward.
And this is really the question, right? I think Amazon is gambling that people are willing to accept that. That people are just going to go, yep, magic, we know it. We've watched Lord of the Rings. We watched Game of Thrones. You know magic's thing. We're just going to move past it. And Sean, you're right. I mean, they really, honestly, in the books, you don't get that magic forward, right? Honestly, you get 100 pages at the start of them in the village, but we don't even see the big Trolloc battle.
Just a little bit. It's mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah, it's mentioned, but we don't actually see any of that. Mm-hmm. This one, I think they are just front loading it. Like, yes, this is action. You want action, we'll give you action. And the other part we haven't talked about yet, I think the real star of the show is the Slovenian Board of Tourism, because they make this look amazing. Yeah. I mean, they're doing for Slovenia and, you know, outside of Ljubljana, exactly what Lord of the Rings did for New Zealand. I mean, I'm going to go there next summer. It looks amazing.
Yeah, the landscapes are awesome.
Really looks expensive, and it probably is. But yeah, it was beautiful, beautiful. And the effects and everything aren't bad. They're not the greatest, but they certainly pass for what they need to do for a high fantasy. Some of the trolls, which are Trollocs.
Trollocs.
Tara made a good joke when it was time to kill. There's a Trolloc problem scene where somebody has to decide whether to kill a couple Trollocs or, you know, save a couple people. It was sort of hit and miss with those guys. Some of them look really good. Mm-hmm. Some of them look like they were just wearing rubber masks. The greatest thing about the Trolloc scenes, as a quick aside, is when there's a lot of them, you really have to like rewind, watch it two or three times, because some of the Trolloc actors are really into it. And some of them look like they're just beer buddies casually agreeing with each other when they're supposed to be screaming with their swords and stuff. They're all Falcons this week? Yeah, Falcons, I think.
I wish that the Trollocs were enveloped a little bit more in darkness. I wish they didn't show so much of them, you know, because I that would make them a little scarier.
Yeah, they weren't really scary. I mean, they were vicious and brutal, but sometimes they looked wrong, and it was just like it took you out of it a bit. What do you guys think of the casting? Did it match kind of what your brain wanted it to be?
So, Dave, I think actually when you talked about being like D&D, I think you were actually dead on, because when I was reading this when I was in high school in the 90s, it very much everyone was white. And if you look at the paintings on the covers, everyone is white. And this one they did like modern D&D does, where it is completely colorblind. There's just There's people of all races and colors all over the place. And yeah, they just want to say it's diversity. You know, we've got enough problems with that in the real world, so let's not bring this into our fantasy realm. It doesn't look like what we thought it was going to look in the 90s, but that's fine. I mean, there's no reason these characters couldn't have totally colorblind casting as long as they work around the plot. And I'm actually not convinced they've figured out how to work around that in the plot yet.
I'm fine with the casting. Like Dan mentioned, they're not necessarily what I imagined in my head, but that's fine. I think some of the changes they've made to the characters are positive. Like I like some of these characters more than I liked the book characters potentially ever. Like even after whatever 14 books, I think Nynaeve is already more likable than she ever was. She hasn't pulled a braid. She hasn't, you know, sniffed. She hasn't smoothed her skirt. She hasn't folded her arms. Like she's killing it compared to the book character so far. Matt is good, but he's been recast. So I don't know what we'll see for the future.
I was watching the Matt character. I was like, is he going to be a bad actor? I know he's been recast. Is he going to be bad? No, he's fine. He's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe he's just an asshole.
I find Matt to be much more likable in this than I ever did in the books, where it's like, oh, he's just a dirtbag hipster. Like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know why anyone's hanging out with him. They did make some strange decisions, right? Where they are trying to up the backstory. We're saying, he's a thief because he's trying to take care of his family. But then, you know, the crisis comes and goes, well, I'm out of here. And just, you know, a couple episodes later, he's like, maybe I should go back. But he doesn't, you know, they gave everyone something to do back in the village and then just had them leave the village without really. I mean, we're just skipping parts of our hero's journey. They skipped. You're supposed to refuse the call at first, guys. You're supposed to. Oh, never mind. Okay, never mind. We're not doing that. Cool.
It's just we must go. And they went.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, like, did we have to go? Wait, what the hell is going on now? The other thing that I found to be a really big difference that Dave wouldn't have noticed from the books is that...
Spoilers ahoy!
They are making the point that, the Dragonborn could be a man or a woman. And that's a big difference. And I think is tied into the colorblindness of it, saying, well, it's not just we're not going to have the one white guy as being the necessary central character. They are spreading it a lot. I mean, in the books, there's no question that Rand is the guy because everything is told from his perspective. Where in this one, they are splitting it up a lot more. And they say it could be one of these women. Now, I have a bit of a problem with that. I think it undercuts the central tension of the book. Like in Dune, the big problem is guys can't be trusted with this power and say, but maybe a woman has it. Like, well, then where's our drama? Like there's no conflict that if it's, you know, one of the two women they think it could be. So I worry that they're kind of trying to make it a little too PC, being, it could be a woman, when that fights against the central metaphor of the show, which I worry about a little bit.
I didn't think it was necessary to say any of the five of them could be the Dragon Reborn. Ooh, it's a mystery, but it's like, you know who's on the cover of the books. You know, it's pretty obvious who it's going to be.
Do you think they might change it?
No, there's no way. No way.
Okay. Stay tuned.
No, there are 14 books. I will say that I've read the series for 25 years. I've read each book more than 13 times. It's like I know every inch of it. And like they have to elide a lot of things, which is pretty obvious from the beginning. They're, you know, just have to go a lot faster. 14 books, and if they want to do 7 seasons, they're going to have to elide a ton of things. But they can't change who's the Dragon Reborn.
So says Sean.
I'm right.
Do you guys agree? They're just opening up the possibilities, but it has to be this character in the end.
Yeah, I think they're counting the fact that most people watching this will not have read the books. Mm-hmm. And if you go on the Wikipedia page to read about it, you might as well just read a whole other book because you're going to end up reading a couple hundred pages worth of Wikipedia to find out what actually happens in the books, right? These are not, and these are lengthy books. And a lot of that is because they are trying to put a lot of detail into what is happening, right? So if you read the books, you know every detail of life down in, you know, Edmunds Rivers or wherever they are, you know exactly what's going on there. And, you know, you don't have to put that. You don't have to describe all the clothing because you're just, that's what their clothing looks like.
Yeah.
So it's useful in that way. But it does also take, I think, something away from what makes this book special, what makes this not a D&D campaign, is that you know that Robert Jordan had a giant Silmarillion-like notebook of 10,000 pages describing every single thing and every single culture. And you don't get that here. This, it devolves down to basic generic fantasy culture. And that's a little disappointing. That said, no one's going to stick around for the Silmarillion, as Amazon's going to find out when they try and make the Silmarillion into a show in a couple years.
Right. So as fantasy fans, there are particular things about the experience of reading a book that can never be translated for the screen. Is the minutia of this world, as, you know, the world building that Jordan brings into this, like, do you get the sense that the episode is doing the same job, or do you feel like this is a greatest hits of Wheel of Time?
I mean, I think it's a little unfortunate, because I feel like the first book is maybe the least interesting in a way. It is the most like Tolkien of them. Mm-hmm. As time goes on, like if they get multiple seasons, the show will get more interesting, and maybe more interesting from somebody who came from Game of Thrones might be more interested because it becomes more political. If they're going to do 7 or 8 seasons, it's going to have to be a greatest hits kind of situation, which will be hard, because I think it, then nothing gets to breathe, and some of it shouldn't breathe. Like, I've read those books, and you could probably cut a couple,
yeah,
and move along okay. There are subplots that kind of go nowhere, especially toward the end when Robert Jordan was sick and dying, and then Brandon Sanderson took over and finished the books up. And you can, like, that first book that Brandon Sanderson writes is like, I'm going to kill some guys because we got to get going.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I got a schedule to keep here.
He's the foreman of Wheel of Time. He's like tapping his watch. Let's go, guys.
Yeah. He's like, I realize that there are already 11 of these, but I'm not going to do another 11.
I got to pick up the kids. Let's go.
And he probably wrote it during breakfast anyway. That guy writes like 4 books a day. They're going to cut some of the subtlety, and they're going to cut probably some of the subplots. And I think that'll probably be okay.
I think that'll be fine. I tend to have the reaction, like when I saw all the Harry Potter movies, the first time I'd see the Harry Potter movie, I'm like, this is not the book. This is not the book. They cut this out. They cut that out. And I'd get mad about it. And the second time I'd watch it, I would figure out if I could like it or not. I was like, oh no, this was a good movie, because they adapted it well. But like the first time, it's like my brain is like, this is wrong. So I tried to, when seeing it for the first time, The Wheel of Time, I was like, okay, let's see how they're adapting this story. One of the things I didn't like was Emmons Field was like an idyllic town where everything seemed safe and everything was warm and everybody was protected. And they made it a lot more gritty with people's backstories. And so it's not like they're going from this place of protection to, you know, disrupting paradise to leaving on this journey. So like that was the part I didn't like as much. You know, I accepted it. It's fine. Whatever. I'm going to continue watching the show. But it's like there are little things like that.
Well, let's get into it. What things did bother you? You're just like, actually,
I'll tell you that I liked that they had rings that showed the color of their Aja. The Aja is a very important thing with the Aes Sedai, what sect of the Aes Sedai they are. I did not like the color coding of all their outfits for their Aja. I was like, okay, so she's a blue, so she's always going to wear blue. And that's a little annoying. I was like, just show a ring. Oh, it's blue. Okay, let's go on. It doesn't have to be there on screen every second.
Yeah, and I think Rosamund Pike does a very good job as an Aes Sedai as being, and she actually has a lot more emotion, and her warder, Lan, has a lot more emotion than they do in the book. There's implication of a sexual relationship there that certainly is never at all in the books. My biggest problem is actually the way that sorority, the Aes Sedai, is presented, in that they come in, it's like, oh, magic users, oh, and everyone's like, oh, good, 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 they're here. Where in the books, they are presented as being very much something people are ambivalent about. Like, people do not want them around. They kill people. They are not all good. People do not trust them. And we don't get that sense in the show. I mean, I said the books are very much told from Rand's point of view. The show so far is very much, I think, more told from the Aes Sedai's point of view. And that means we are on her side from the start when the characters are not. And so it becomes almost a little weird when halfway through episode 2, we get Rand going, hey, is this Aes Sedai actually a good person? I don't know what's going on here. I think she's taking my girlfriend away, so I don't like her. Like, you know, and I think we need to have a little more distrust of them in order for the rest of the plot to make sense.
my brain wanted them to be more like a CIA cleanup crew or something like that. Like they are going into Guatemala, they're going to fix things up right, and then they're going to leave. I mean, that and that's sort of their function. You know, they come in, they do what they need to do for their world order. Any collateral damage is not really their problem.
Well, they centered it on Rosamund Pike, who's the most famous person cast in the show. She's
with her dead shark eyes.
She's a producer on the show. And it's like centering it around Sean Bean, even though like Game of Thrones is, you know, passed amongst all those different people. It's like you, everybody recognizes Sean Bean anyway. So they center it on her. They make it less obvious who the Dragon Reborn is. And it, you know, it's a choice. It's fine. I think now that their plots are splintering, you'll get something more like the book.
Jim, anything annoy the fantasy nerd in you?
Episode one was probably the weakest. And obviously had the most changes. There's some things that happen with like between Tam, which is Rand's father, and Rand after the attack of the Trolloc and in their little farmhouse that doesn't come up. They have some conversations and then also sort of marries into the distrust of the Aes Sedai because Tam has some things to say about like, you know, there's even the question of whether or not he should get healed because then they're going to owe Moraine, right? Like it's not just she doesn't walk up and lay hands on him and then everybody's happy again. It's like, what does this mean, you know, for Tam or for Rand that he's accepting her help?
It's like you don't always know the price that you're going to pay,
right?
Kind of thing.
I think the biggest disappointment of the show so far is that when you're watching Amazon, they have a little button at the bottom of the screen that says, you know, shop the show, and I'm like, great, and you click on it. And then you cannot buy any of Rand's sweaters because he has these amazing sweaters.
Yeah.
And they will not let you buy them. They're not selling them at all. And I don't know how he's making these sweaters out of the wool he gets from the sheep there. But boy, howdy, they're amazing. I mean, we need to get some of those.
I will say, after having consumed Game of Thrones, it's so nice to have color in a fantasy series again. Like people actually wearing blues and reds and the very smart white army, the army that looks like they're all at a fancy restaurant. Like what?
The white cloaks.
The white cloaks. I have a question about the white cloaks. What is their laundry regime like? Because they're a traveling army. There's a guy that is a real weirdo that is hunting down the magic user women sorority, the Aes Sedai. Is that correct?
Aes Sedai.
Yeah. And yet, spotless, crisp whites. They look like Indiana Jones at the start of Temple of Doom. Fantastic. How do they maintain those white whites? Is that also covered in the book and is in magic involved?
No, magic isn't involved because they hate magic. They're based off the Knights Templar and the Knights Templar outfit. In my own imagination, they had a little bit more armor on top of the white, but they had lots of white like that. But it's based off that historical thing.
And again, I think this is a place where shorthand is getting the show in trouble because, look, in the books, right, the whole idea is that they're hunting out the Aes Sedai, but the Aes Sedai might be bad guys. So even though these guys are also bad guys, you know, the enemy, enemy of my enemy might be my friend. Where in this one, they're introduced as being just straight up villains, right? He's eating ortolan at the start, right? Ortolan, that's the dish from Billions, right? You have to cover your head with a cloth so God doesn't see you eat it, you know? And the idea that that's how you're going to introduce these guys, like, oh, these are just straight villains. I mean, it does, again, they're simplifying it down, taking out complexity because they're trying to make this for 14-year-olds, right? They're taking out, they're not having any explicit sex, anything. The violence isn't too bad because they want to be able to sell this to teenagers. This is PG-13 Game of Thrones. And look, a lot of people liked about Game of Thrones was the fact it wasn't PG-13.
Right.
So I don't know how well that works.
Right, right. Did you have bloodlust that wasn't satiated, Jim?
No. That attack on Aemon's Field at the beginning doesn't actually occur in the book. Like Rand, it's all kind of told from Rand's perspective. So he shows up after the fact and sees the aftermath, but we don't see Moraine and Lan and, you know, the women ganging up on things and stuff like that. So it was, if anything, more bloody.
The producers have said they have an 8-year plan for this. Are we going to see 8 years of Wheel of Time?
Yeah, because Amazon doesn't care about ratings and they've got money to burn. So, you know, it's either this or a rocket ship. Why not?
Sean, what do you think?
I really hope so. I don't know yet.
Jim, is it going to last 8 seasons? And if so, will it get consumed by Lord of the Rings when they're competing on the same network?
I mean, I guess The Expanse is in season 5, which I didn't know that show was still on. So, sure, this could go 8. This could go 20.
They spent a lot of money on The Man in the High Castle, and who watched that, and it looked incredibly expensive.
Yeah. we are certainly in a streaming world where a lot of shows are getting renewed that certainly would never be renewed just 5 years ago, just because everybody needs everything. So if that trend can continue for the next decade, certainly I think Wheel of Time has a chance to do the full 8 years. 8 years going to be enough. That's my last question for you guys.
I think it is, because, I mean, look, as much as I like the books, the problem with the books is that Act 2 takes forever, right? Act 1 is the first two or three mm-hmm. books, get everything set up. Brandon Sanderson writes Act 3, and there's 10 books of Act 2. You could cut that down pretty significantly, you know, and especially, and this, people know, learn how to teleport at a certain point, so you can, a lot of the traveling you can probably cut out. So yeah, you could definitely do it. And at the rate they're going, they're going to do the first book in one season. I mean, you know, they're going to have to pick up that pace quite a bit, and I think it is going to be a cutting out that stuff out of Act 2.
I agree. I know that they're actually putting parts of book two and book three in for the first season, just so that they can introduce characters who become important later. So it's like they get those characters cast, they get those plot lines going, as opposed to waiting to have to get to like book four or book five. I think there's plenty of things that they don't have to do in a TV show that they can skip over from the books and it'll be fine and they'll get to the end much quicker.
I mean, the last book is one big battle. Like, to my recollection, it is literally just the last battle. You don't need a season for that.
Well, the saving grace of this series is that it is finished, because yes. With Game of Thrones, like, I was reading the first book along with watching the first season, and you could go basically chapter by chapter for that whole first season. And when they ran out of book, it got to be very TV shortcutty, went off the rails and was terrible. I kept on watching. I watched the very end, but it was like, oh, they just didn't know what they're doing because they didn't have the books to tell them where to go. And they can take an outline that the books give them for this, take out all the things that weren't needed in the end, and make a shorter, more concise story.
Speaking about Wheel of Time, do you know what time it is?
Is it game time?
It is game time. All right, everybody, welcome back to Game Time. This is a non-regulation game since we don't have our regulars here. Today, we are playing Wheel of Time from yours truly, but it is really a creation of the folks at EHG Assist on Twitter who ran with my half a dozen questions or so and made the delightfully deranged game you are about to play. In Wheel of Time, T-H-Y-M-E, I will read you a description of a TV show, actor, character, or something else in TV land with some spicy overtones, and you have to give me the name of the spice-laden TV thing. Here is an example. Lorelai is really in a pickle when she finds herself pregnant at 16 in this aromatic show.
Dillmore Girls?
Dillmore Girls
oh,
is correct.
Oh, my God.
That is how you play Wheel of Time.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
We've got 27 questions for you today. It is one of the dumbest games we've had in a little while. Really looking forward to it. Let's throw it to Picky to see who will go first.
We will start with valued guest.
Of course, that means Dan Cassino is going first, followed by Sean and Jim. Everybody ready to play Wheel of Time?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Dan, this 70s sitcom adds a Caribbean flavor to your favorite meathead. Now, at this point, while Dan's thinking, I will say some are rhyme puns, some are suffix puns, prefix puns, totally shoehorned puns. As long as we think you can suss it out, we put this in the game. So, once again, this 70s sitcom adds a Caribbean flavor to your favorite meathead.
Oh, boy. All right, so it's jerk seasoning. I've got that much. I'm just trying to remember what the name of that show is with, you know, oh, it's Welcome Back, Cotter, but it's jerk seasoning? Welcome Jerk Cotter?
I'll put you out of your misery there because you had the wrong show. Meathead is a reference to All in the Family.
Of course, All in the Family.
This is All Spice in the Family.
All Spice.
All right, Sean, your first question. This series took a bland martial arts movie and gave it a serious kick. This series took a bland 80s martial arts movie and gave it a serious kick.
I think I'm on the wrong track because all I can think is Highlander. Why do I, like, I feel, this feels very homophobic that I keep on getting these martial arts action movie questions. Pass, I don't know.
Anybody want to take a stab at that one? Started on YouTube. It is now on Netflix.
Oh,
Cobra Kai. All right, let's see if somebody can get their first question. Jim, instead of a rainbow, these ursine animals shoot loaves of rye bread out of their tummies.
So it's My Little Pony.
Ursine mammals.
Oh, Care Bears. But rye bread.
What goes in rye bread?
I don't know.
Oh, Dave, that's got to be the Caraway Bears.
Caraway Bears is correct, caraway yes.
Bears. Sean knew that one too, sorry.
It's okay.
All right, back to Dan. In this just-ended CBS sitcom, a mother and daughter live and work the AA steps together. And since they've given up drinking alcohol, they can finally perfect their chai recipe.
All right, so the show is Mom, and I want to say it's Cardamom.
You are correct. That is our first true point.
All right, Dave, I got to say, I never thought the face-eating leopard would eat my face. This isn't okay.
All right, Sean. This smoky, peppery blend talks directly to the camera about high school, her bratty little brother, and basic cable sitcoms of the 1990s. Pretty much anything.
So I'm thinking it's Clarissa Explains It All? Because you said she. Karam?
No.
Explains It All?
Incorrect. Anybody?
Oh, Harissa. Harissa all right,
we'll give it to you.
We'll give it to you.
All right, we'll give it to you. All right, this is the dumbest one that I contribute to the game. Good luck, Jim. Here we go. Though this kitchen appliance business is located in Scranton, Pennsylvania, it offers a particular southeastern French mix to its customers. If you get this, I'm giving you 2 points. That's how dumb this one is.
Can I get that one more time?
Though this kitchen appliance business is located in Scranton, Pennsylvania, it offers a particular southeastern French mix to its customers.
I got nothing.
Okay. It's a tough one. Anybody suss that one out?
Nope.
That is, and I don't blame you for not getting it, that is Herb de Provence Refrigeration from The Office.
Okay.
Dad! She said farewell to her fellow Herb de Provence to marry Homer and be a Herb de Springfield.
All right. So it's Marge Simpson, but it's Marjoram Simpson.
You are correct. Sean, he was great on Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman, Roseanne, and In Some Hot Wine for the Holidays.
Hot wine. He was great. I don't know who is on Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. I know who was on Roseanne.
All right, I'll give you a clue. It's not Mr. Goodman. We're not talking about Mr. Goodman.
Sean, it's my understanding Mary Hartman was on there at least once.
Twice, at
Maybe
least.
Maybe twice.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another show this guy was on that I could point you to. TV 101? Maybe that'll help you?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Well, mull it over.
Nope. Gotta pass.
Martin Mulled Wine.
Martin Mulled Spices. Oh, yes, we'll give you that one. Yes.
He was on...
I even said Mull It Over. It didn't trigger anything.
Mull It Over. Yeah. He was on Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
There you go. Back to Jim. The dullest girl in Litchfield Prison can't hide the fact she's the most basic spice on every table.
I mean, it's salt, but I don't...
Or...
Pepper. But see, I don't know. I don't know the actress or the... show.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Well, it's Pepper, because her name's Piper.
All right. Well, it's Pepper Chapman is her actual character.
Chapman, yeah.
Or, right. Dave, Orange is the New Black Pepper. It works, too.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
Dan, the star of High School Musical movie series gives food a beautiful golden color.
Okay, so that's Zach Safron.
Yes, it is Zach Safron. You are correct. Sean. A soup-lived series about a pasty high school girl going through fermentation.
My so-called life. A soup? Say that again.
A short-lived series, but I just changed it. A soup-lived series about a pasty high school girl going through fermentation.
Fermentation. I'm not getting the pun. It's like, what do they use in fermentation? They use barley. I don't know. What did they use?
It's really close to the actual title. Anybody know it? Miso Called Life.
Miso Called Life.
Jim, this rebooted procedural combines sweet, bitter, sour, salty, and umami flavors working together to investigate crimes in Honolulu.
So Hawaii 5-0.
This rebooted procedural combines sweet, bitter, salty, sour, and umami flavors working together to investigate crimes around Honolulu. He can't get it. He's trying. He's not connecting the dots on that one. Anybody?
I mean, it's Hawaii 5-0, but Hawaii 5 oregano?
Mm-mm. Those combinations are what create five spice. That is Hawaii five spice.
Five spice.
I'm just glad. I think we broke Sean, so I'm just glad.
No, I'm crying a little bit, but I'll be good.
All right, Dan. Just between us squirrel friends, this spice sounds like a weapon, but is considered a sister spice to nutmeg. Shantae, you stay on that spice rack because I can't think how I use this spice in a recipe.
Wow. Okay. Yep. The spice is definitely mace, right? Because that's the shell of the nutmeg, and it sounds like a weapon. But
Shantae, mace. You stay.
Yeah, I don't know rack. What that's from, oh. Dave. That's, it doesn't help.
Sean, steal. But, Sean wants but, to steal this so, one.
I'm going to pass. Sean, what is it?
RuPaul's Drag Mace.
RuPaul's Drag Mace is correct. He had all the spice information, but not the TV show. That's teamwork. All right. Sean, an OBGYN juggles work and her personal life while trying to maintain her fresh breath.
Private Parsley?
Nope. I'll give you another guess. Different show.
Different show. OBGYN. The Mindy Project. The Minty Project.
Yay! There we go.
Hey!
All right, Jim. Question. An unscrupulous New Mexico lawyer gradually moves from interesting spices to one of the most common.
The name of the show has completely fled my brain.
It's not Breaking Bad.
No, it's the Better Call Saul. Better Call Salt.
There we go. Boom.
Hey.
All right. Dan. Most know him from CNN. Some like to remember him as the host of The Mole. But to 25% of the people out there, he just tastes like soap.
Okay, so it's cilantro. It's Anderson Cooper, but Anderson Coriander?
You got it, but you're not in the right order.
Coriander Cooper?
Anderson
Cooper.
There we go. Dumbest game ever. You got the point. Here we go, Sean. This tribal leader is no more than three apples high, lives in a mushroom, and is made from dried and ground red peppers.
Papa Smurf from dried Smurf?
Dried and ground red peppers.
Dried and ground red peppers. Smustard. Smustard.
Oh, it's paprika Smurf.
Here you go. We're really gonna break Sean. All right, Jim.
Oh.
All right.
Dave, I hope you got the insurance policy you took Sean out of the dealership. Hey, you're gonna have
y'all signed waivers for a reason, guys. Jeff, this Bravo, this Bravo franchise follows the trials and tribulations of onion-esque herbs who are always flipping dinner tables.
Real House Chives.
Real House Chives. Boom. Oh. All right, this is a tough one. Dan.
Thank you.
Seattle's a long way from Latin America, but aren't you glad this show has lasted 18 seasons? And I know you watched this show. You watched this show, like, grudgingly.
So it's the show is Grey's Anatomy, definitely.
Yeah, the so trick is, do you know this spice? Because I've never heard of it.
Because it's so it's Grey, so it's... Grey's Anatomy.
You just said it. You said it, even though it was part of something bigger that Anatomia? You said. Grey's Anatomy. It is part of a...
I've heard of Anatomy. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to give you that point. Whew. All right, this is one of my favorite ones. It is for Sean. A five-year mission to combine dried thyme, oregano, marjoram, and mix them with toasted sesame seeds, salt, and sumac.
All I can think is Star Anise Trek. Star. I don't know.
That spice blend just sounds like Mrs. Dash to me, so I don't know.
It is a spice blend. You are correct. Zatar Trek. Zatar Trek.
Zatar Trek.
All right, Jim. Mm-hmm. You know her as a legendary comedian and producer who worked alongside Ed Asner and Dick Van Dyke on TV. And along Parsley and Sage at Scarborough Fair.
I got nothing.
It's Rosemary Tyler Moore. Damn. The new kids at this posh California high school are twins Brandon and Brenda, fresh from their family's crab fishing operation in Baltimore.
All right. So it's Beverly Hills 90210. And the crab fishing is, okay, God, I can see the jar it comes in. The crab fishery, the spice they always put on everything in Maryland. All right. What do they call it? What is that spice called?
I'll give you a hint. This is going at the end okay, so of what you think you already know.
No, I don't. 90210. I can even see the stupid jar. Yeah, it's got a little crab on it.
Does all this information is correct? Can anybody fill in that blank that is escaping Dan? Beverly Hills.
I'm trying to remember what it's called. I can't remember.
90210. Old Bay seasoning.
Okay.
All right, back to Sean. We're nearing the end of our game, mercifully. This new and approved actor will heat up shows like For All Mankind and the latest season of In Treatment and will not gum up the works like his flavorless predecessor.
All I can think of is Ted McGinley, but that's not right.
Definitely not on For All Mankind.
Well, who's watched For All Mankind?
I have. Let's see, what else shows can I put in there for you? Altered Carbon?
Oh, it's... Yes, he is flavorless, generally. I can't remember him. He is RoboCop.
Well, yes, he is, but that's not the answer.
Nope.
Anybody?
No, I don't know what the spice would be. What is it?
Heat up shows will not gum up the works like his flavorless predecessor. We're talking Joel Cinnamon.
Joel Cinnamon.
Jim. Yes, some may find her voice grating, but she played an ex-wife of her real-life husband on Parks and Rec.
I can picture her. She was also on Will and Grace.
That is correct. If you don't know her name, this is going to be very tough.
It's going to be really hard. I don't think I got nothing.
All right, we'll pass it on to the group. Anybody?
All right, well, the actress is Megan Mullally. Yeah.
Some may find her voice grating.
That's correct.
What do you grate?
Nutmeg Mullally.
Nutmeg Mullally. Correct. All right. Oof. Last question for everybody. Coming up, Dan.
All right. I'm just upset the EHGSS people apparently are grating their own nutmeg. They've got their little mortal and pestle out for the whole thing.
No, you have a microplane. That's how you do nutmeg, guy.
No one does that, Dave. It comes in a jar. I get it at Costco.
For shame. Just by looking at her, you know she's a star. As an orphan, she's taken her licorice in life, but she's finally found a home at Green Gables.
All right. So
Annie, is it?
It's not you. It's not you. It's Dan.
It's not me. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Stand by for the steal.
Thank you, Sean, for mentioning the spice earlier. Is Anise with an E?
Anise with an E is correct. The reboot of Anne of Green Gables. Sean, here is your last question. When they went back in time for Szechuan sauce, they found everything stained yellow. On the bright side, everything is now an anti-inflammatory and an antioxidant.
So it's Rick and Morty. So it's turmeric and Morty?
You are correct.
Yay, I got one!
All right. Sharing the crown for our stupidest one in this game is Jim's last one.
Oh, Dave, we're all sharing the crown for stupidest one in this game.
When the G.I. Joe episode's PSA is about cooking Italian dishes, this is the catchphrase.
Knowing is half the battle. No, I got nothing.
Dan's leaning in.
It's oregano-ing is half the battle.
Oregano-ing is half the battle is correct. That is our final regulation score. Let me give you the scores. The scores are currently everybody has the same number of points, so let's throw the tiebreaker to see who is going to win. When you know the answer, shout it out. First person to shout out the answer will win this game. Here we go. This character came to 30 Rockefeller Plaza from Chicago, but she started in Southeast Asia.
Liz Lemongrass
is correct. Final scores are Dan wins!
Valued guest.
Oh, a Pyrrhic victory if I've ever had one.
Oh, that was tough. That was really tough.
Well, we'd like to have fun when there's no stakes involved. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We spent about 28 minutes going around and around about Amazon's Wheel of Time adaptation before spicing it up with a game time from the salty folks at EHG Assist. Next up, we remake a miniseries for 2021 on Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, it is the HBO character Thunderdome. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Mr. Dan Cassino,
Trollic, I hardly knew her,
Jim Durr.
Maybe it wasn't the worst bell time I've ever had.
And Sean Pfluger.
I'm the same character you remember from the book, but with a grittier backstory.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grade.
We can't just leave.
They're after you. They will follow you. And if you stay here, this is where they'll come. They will leave nothing and no one standing, and I can't do anything to stop them. There's no time. We leave now.